Welcome to NucleCast, the official podcast of the Amrod Deterrence Center. Our host is Dr. Adam Lauffel, co-founder and vice president for research at the National Institute for Deterrence Studies. The Amrod Deterrence Center is a 501c3 organization ensuring a broader understanding of the nation's strategic nuclear deterrence and its ongoing modernization. Thank you for listening and welcome to the show. The views of the host and the guests are their own.
Welcome back to another exciting episode of NucleCast. Of course, I'm your host, as always, Adam Lowther. And today, we have a great guest. Dr. William Conwell is the Deputy Associate Administrator for Budget at the National Nuclear Security Administration. And today, as you may guess, we're going to talk about the budget. And so, of course, you know, budgets are a big deal. I mean, how many, you know, it's funny, Dale, when we have guests on NucleCast, we often ask them, I have a genie. I don't know if you probably may or may not have known, but I have a personal genie. His name's Bob. And at the end of the show, Bob grants all guests three wishes. And the number one wish of guests is a budget. And so it's, you know, it's one of those topical things that's on the top of everybody's mind. And you, sir, are the one who gets to discuss this topic because we're in a position to have a budget soon. So with that, let me turn it over to you and ask you sort of a broad question. And that is, can you discuss for us, you know, the budget we're set to have, and then maybe compare that with the previous budget and what's new and what's different, and what do we need to know and understand about the budget?
Yeah, well, thank you. Our budget is about a $860 million increase over the previous year. And that has been the case for years in the past because our mission is growing. And our mission is critically important to the national security of the nation. And so it's great to work on this budget because not only is it, you know, an interesting challenge and an effort, but to be able to work on something with the broad implications to national security is a lot of, is important to me in my career. This budget is basically five major national security endeavors, I think, is a way to look at it. You'll see that in our budget documents. It's first and foremost, maintain the safety, security, reliability of an effective nuclear weapons stockpile. That is base number one. But closely related to that is to reduce global nuclear threats. And so it is interesting in our budget that while we have the second is there as well. We want to keep nuclear and radiological materials out of the hands of terrorists. And then underpinning both of those efforts is to strengthen our key science, technology, and engineering capabilities. That supports our certification and assessment process and applies to our current and future life extension programs. So without the science, we can't assess it, we can't certify it, and we certainly would undermine the future of the stockpile. And never forget that NNSA is also responsible, working with naval reactors to provide a safe and militarily effective integrated nuclear propulsion system to the U.S. Navy. And so we support the Navy in that part specifically. And then I think the bottom line thing here that is really a continuing change and effort in our budget has been to modernize the nuclear security infrastructure. So our infrastructure, if you had a chance to see the movie, which I think recently just won a few Oscars, maybe, you'll see that that effort, this organization is that organization. We trace our heritage back to that organization that General Groves and Dr. Oppenheimer worked on. And unfortunately, some of our buildings actually still date back to that effort. And so it's critically important that that part of our infrastructure be modernized, just as we continue to work on modernizing the stockpile and the science that underpins it.
So for the listeners who may not be familiar with NNSA's budget, could you sort of go over the numbers in terms of what is the budget? How is it allocated amongst these five major efforts? And then could you maybe give us a little bit of sense of what it's like to work with Congress to get a budget through for those who may not have ever worked on Capitol Hill or, you know, maybe DOD folks instead of DOE folks?
Yeah. So our budget is for appropriations is the language that we use. So we have four appropriations. The biggest and central one is the weapons activities appropriation. In this budget, that's about $19.8 billion. So big portion of our budget. And then the defense nuclear non-proliferation appropriation is about $2.5 billion or thereabouts. And it is that part that we talked about that is reducing those global nuclear threats. And critically important to all our national security endeavors across the globe, and integrating with the Atomic Energy Agency and those sorts of efforts. And then, of course, naval reactors appropriation is about $2.1 billion, and they are doing incredible work with life of ship reactors and have a major infrastructure efforts on their own, building a spent fuel handling facility in Idaho. Then the final piece is relatively small, but it's kind of near and dear to my heart, because not only am I much more responsible for the execution of the federal salaries and expenses budget, about $500 million, or in this budget request, it'll be about $506 million. $564 million, just to be precise. But it pays my salary. So I think that's a very important part of the budget. Those four make up the appropriations for the budget. I think one of the things that's really interesting about working, at the National Nuclear Security Administration is the fact that we do interface directly with our examiners at the White House and our congressional staff on the Hill. And so I just came from a briefing with some of the Hill staff discussing our federal salaries and expenses budget. So we're about within the FSC budget, about 1,903, to be precise, federal employees today, but you can think of it around 2,000 federal employees. And that's a great place to get a chance to get in and contribute at a level that you can't do in a lot of the larger organizations. I have a background in DOD, and it's a big organization, and there are lots of people responsible for incredibly vast portfolios. But here, if you can get to the real mix of making those budget decisions, participate in that decision-making process and refining the budget, and every budget you build, you're going to have to accept some risks. And so having the opportunity to weigh in on that, to listen to the discussions, to learn how that budget gets put together is a grand opportunity. And so if I haven't made a sales pitch yet to look at some of our postings for jobs at NNSA, I would be remiss, because it's a great place to work.
So for those that may not be familiar with NNSA, and we talk, you know, we've talked to many of your counterparts across NNSA, but for those that don't understand the budgeting process, that don't understand how you design and operate, perhaps they're familiar with DOD's process for, you know, determining how, you know, what the requirements are, you know, looking at that requirement, saying yes to, you know, specific systems, capabilities, operational requirements. How does NNSA go in and look at all of these? You know, we've talked about the five major areas, but how do you go in, look across it, you know, rack and stack how you want to spend your money, what, you know, what you want to ask for? Can you tell us a little bit about that process? You know, is, you know, in terms of, you know, we're used to the Nuclear Weapons Council talking about, you know, requirements and needs. How does NNSA, what is that process and what does it all look like? And how do you ultimately come to a decision to where you then go to Capitol Hill and say, you know, here's our budget submission?
Yeah, so it's interesting you bring up the Nuclear Weapons Council. We work very closely there. We have membership on the Nuclear Weapons Council and attend those meetings routinely. And they at the end of the day are our basic requirements driver. That's where we really get our big requirements. They come from the president and the national security policy and through the nuclear posture review, but on a day-to-day basis, we are meeting with the Nuclear Weapons Council once, twice a month, and making sure that we are tied at the hip with DOD, because national security, nuclear national security, is requires both of us, and requires both of us to be aligned in scope and schedule. And so that's a critical part of where we derive our requirements. It isn't the only place we derive requirements. At the end of the day, our administrator and the Secretary of Energy have to take the responsibility for the environmental, safety, health aspects of this enterprise. We have sites all over the country, and we have perhaps 70,000 employees in the nuclear security enterprise on a day-to-day basis, and we operate with very dangerous materials that we want to make sure are handled safely and securely. And so that drives some of our requirements, but we work closely with the State Department, with our Defense Nuclear Nonproliferation Office. And so there are interagency efforts that are always ongoing that drive some of our requirements. And so all of those requirements come down. I think the things that some of the things that make NNSA unique are, because we're a smaller organization and able to be a little bit more agile sometimes. I have within my office, I have the budget analysts for all of the programs, and I matrix those people out to the program offices. But they work within the budget shop, and that's where their care and feeding, their training, and that sort of stuff goes on. And one of the key things that that enables us to do is to produce, you know, going back to military terms, I refer to it as a common operating picture, right? It's really just a tool that lays out our budget execution data. But it's incredibly important that we have one tool that we all look at and reference, and we communicate to the White House through our OMB examiners and to the Hill through the Hill staffers on where we stand and where we plan to execute in the future. And then one other thing that I would bring up is that, I think the funny part about this is I was talking with the NNSA HR director a couple of years ago, and I said, well, I need these, we call them 801 and 1301s and it's specialties. And she said, you're a budget shop. You don't need scientists and engineers. And I said, yes, but I'm a budget shop at the National Nuclear Security Administration. And I do need scientists and engineers, because the stuff we deal with is very complex, particularly in the area of estimating the cost. And that's where we rely on having scientists and engineers. I'm sure there are a number of people who's confused as to why do you have a PhD physicist doing your budget? Well, because it's the National Nuclear Security Administration's budget. And so that requires a level of technical understanding and the ability to translate that to the Hill, to the working with our examiners at OMB and in general to the public. And so those are some of the unique aspects of how the process plays out here at NNSA.
Now, one of the things that, you know, is particularly interesting about NNSA and how it operates is that, you know, you have the labs, and the labs are government-owned, contractor-operated. Does that fundamentally change the way you develop budgets and the way you account for the work that's done? Or is that, you know, in some respects similar to where DOD has, you know, prime contractors that build systems, and it's similar to that, or is it somehow fundamentally different?
I think there are probably plenty of agencies within the government that have relationships that are similar to the GOCO model, the government-owned, contractor-operated model. I think it certainly is different in the sense that, so when I referenced cost estimating, I can't do a cost estimate on a life extension program for a weapon on my own with just the federal employees I have. It's not possible. And so we work closely with the labs, plants, and site to hold meetings where we collectively sit down and look at, okay, this component's going to be required. How much more complex is this than the one that was built before? And so we work and we come together and propose a complexity factor. And that helps as you start to build these estimates, that we're not relying on our federal view only. And one of the interesting things that was done here at NNSA was much kind of mirroring DOD and the CAPE function, was that NNSA has its own independent cost estimators. That's not the team that I'm talking about. My team is here to pull their sleeves up and work with the program offices to get the program's estimate. And then we still have the CEP capability to come in and provide an ICE, an independent cost estimate, an ICR, independent cost estimate review, where they look at our cost estimates that we did with the program and with the labs and the plants and sites. So ours is a collaborative effort, not an independent effort. And so we rely heavily on those folks. And in fact, I would say one of the other interesting aspects about our budget is we don't embargo our budget from our labs, plants, and sites. We work with them to build our budget. Now, at a certain point, the budget starts to become the Secretary of Energy's and the President's. And so at that point, we do have to embargo the budget at those points. But we wouldn't be able to pull our budget together without the help of the experts who are doing the work day to day and making, you know, tremendous success. It's amazing to me where we've been. I've been here since 2009. And to think back to 2009, when we were kind of working the W-76 LEP, and there was the hint of a B-61 LEP, and that was about all the activity that was going on. And now, I think you could count 7 LEPs ongoing at this point. And so it's been a pretty big effort to get to where we are today, and a big, big growth in our mission.
Now it's that time in the show where we have to take a quick break. But when we get back, I want you to go into a little more detail about that, because this is a point the administrator has made repeatedly, and you brought it up. Hey, we went from 2 programs to 7 programs. We're busier than ever. So when we come back, talk me through what it means and how you're going about making this really dramatic expansion that, you know, the labs have been hiring at a rapid clip. You know, it's a growth function that's sort of hard to manage and project. So walk me through how you're doing that when we come back. So you're listening to NucleCast, and we'll be right back.
This episode of NucleCast is brought to you by the Amla Deterrence Center.
whose mission is to educate Americans about the nuclear enterprise and strategic deterrence. And we're back, and we're talking to Dr. William Conwell from the National Nuclear Security Administration, and we're talking budgets. And so I posed a big question to you right before the break. So can you walk me through how you're going about projecting this expansion? How are you dealing with this, you know, vast array of projects that you've got undergoing on top of all the infrastructure requirements? How are you doing all that?
Well, I could be glib and say, well, because we are delivering. That's the bottom line. Is it without challenge? Obviously not. I think the whole nation has faced challenges, the global pandemic and ramifications of that with supply chains, commodities, even the skilled trades workforce that's out there. All of those have presented challenges. But for NNSA in particular, we touched on this earlier in our conversation, the infrastructure that we built is old and needs to be replaced. There were points in time earlier, in the 90s and in the aughts that we looked at and thought, there's a peace dividend here. We don't need to do this. And there was support across both parties to look at that, and we did. But the environment has changed, and we are getting clear signals from our requirements driver in DOD that those requirements are up. That drives a number of challenges for us. Both the processes that may have atrophied and the volume that needs to be produced are both greater than what we had previously, a decade or more ago, thought. The science is changing. Not the science of nuclear weapons. That's well founded. But the challenges we face with artificial intelligence and the opportunities that presents are real. The advanced manufacturing continues to drive our capabilities. And when you do something that is a limited number, it really does make sense to explore advanced manufacturing capabilities that are being produced by industry. And so both the, and then I think another piece that folks often miss is that we also looked at the way things were done in the past and said, we're not comfortable with that risk. We're not comfortable with that environmental impact any longer. We've got a higher standard, or a different standard, maybe is a better word, for safety, and capability to monitor and to process these materials. And so all of those things weigh in. I think the fundamental thing that has really changed is the replacing of unique, one-of-a-kind nuclear facilities is a challenge. It just is a big challenge for us. It's across the board with the uranium processing facility, our pit production capability. The spent fuel handling facility has had some challenges. We have, and we're handling those, and we're going to make it work. But it is not a trivial case, and it is a balance that you have to make sure that you continue to deliver while you modernize the infrastructure. And that's why I wanted to open that by saying we're doing it well, because we're delivering. And that's the bottom line. We are delivering this national security requirements are being met. And we've got to strive to continue to meet those. And to do that, we've got to modernize the infrastructure.
So for you thinking about challenges, if you were to rank your challenges, would you say, it's Is it congressional appropriations, environmental regulations, skilled manpower shortages? What would be those things that you would rank and say, you know, this is the biggest challenge I have, this is the second biggest? You know, how would you look at those to say, I could do more, I could do it faster, but these are the things that would be constraining?
Yeah, I don't know that I have a solid answer for you, because I'm not as close to the individual projects as perhaps a project executive or a program executive, because they deal with that day in and day out. I know some things that it's not. It's not the Congress. It's not the White House. We're getting support. Our budgets are growing. Yes, we would love to have a higher budget. So when that genie question comes, I'm gonna ask for that. But that is that it's not a, you know, it's not a lack of support from any of those areas. So I do know there are clear challenges with some of the things you mentioned, the available workforce competing for those resources in the market, the skill sets that are out there. And it's not that they don't have them, but we have very particular requirements for people who work around nuclear facilities or in them. But from my small foxhole here, it comes down to getting us a federal workforce that is the best and best trained to match the growing mission. And so far, we are doing a great job of growing, but our mission is trying to outgrow us. And we have got to make sure that we stay ahead of that. And from my parochial viewpoint, that, you know, that is my piece of the budget that I own uniquely, is that federal salaries and expenses budget. And so if I get a chance to advocate for a portion of our budget, I certainly want to take that opportunity to say, we really need the best and the brightest in the federal government managing this incredible mission.
Yeah. Now, without further ado, I want to bring out Bob the Genie. And as I rub my magic lamp, Bob pops out, of course, and he grants three wishes. And Dale, you are the lucky recipient of three wishes today. Now, the only requirement is you can't wish for global peace or unlimited wealth or unlimited wishes. It's got to be related to the topics we've been discussing. So with that in mind, Dale, I ask you, what is your first wish?
Well, I think we just covered it. So it would be to have the right workforce for our expanded mission. I think that's got to be something that we've got to put as a high priority for our efforts going forward.
Okay, so workforce. Just to follow up very quickly on that, are you finding that you're getting the workforce you need, or are you competing with, you know, Honeywell or, you know, Livermore or Los Alamos or, you know, the other places that folks might go? Or are they saying, you know what, I want to work for NNSA proper?
Yeah. So on that point, though, I do think we are having a very good relationship. We don't, you know, when we hold job fairs, there's a Fed table next to Los Alamos, next to Kansas City. It's not a competitive thing. It's, we want to bring you into the enterprise, and frequently, we have folks who rotate between those. It's not a competitive environment there. It's a win for the enterprise if we get somebody in the enterprise, and we keep them and retain them. And so that's I think is perhaps our big challenge, is keeping and retaining people. We've got a lot of people who are new, and we've got to make sure that we're bringing them on board and that they stick to it. They stay with this incredible mission, and make a career of it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, so we're at wish number two.
These are tough questions, because I guess at the end of the day, it would be just, we've got to have better cost estimating capability. We've got to estimate the costs better. We've got to be able to get to that earlier, to get the full requirements known, and meet this head on and lay out what kind of resources we're going to need. Because first and foremost, obviously, the OMB and the Nuclear Weapons Council and Congress rely on us to give them predictable numbers so that they know what we're going to have to do in the future to get this done. But my biggest concern is that sometimes this stuff crowds out things that are also, when you get to see the budget built, you know what could have been every time, and you think, wow, if only that cost hadn't gone up like that, maybe we could have squeezed in this other and put resources on this risk that we didn't know about. So I think being able to estimate our costs much more accurately is something we're striving to do, but we really need to get ahead of. On a third case, I think probably just a little bit of working the integration now of some of the changes that we've done. So we're separating the Y-12 and Pantex contracts. We're becoming the steward, if you will, for the Savannah River site in 2025. Those are big moves from an organizational perspective. And so those affect people, they affect budgets, they do a lot, and they can create some turbulence that we frankly can't afford. We've got to be able to get these done efficiently and move through them.
Would that be your wish number three, to see all this work out as it, you would hope it would?
There you go.
Yeah. Let me ask you one final question, because we're about out of time. And if you were to pick one thing that poses the greatest challenge for effective cost estimating, is there one thing, or is it a whole bunch of little things? What makes it so hard?
It is a lot of things. The one I think that vexes us frequently is not having a full and complete understanding of the requirements, and having that mission creep. That's just death to a program, to a project. When you've built your security and your HVAC and everything to this square footage and this space on the ground, and then something comes and changes that after you've built all those estimates, it's a redo that we don't need to see. So getting our requirements early and accurate is a big step in improving those cost estimates, but it isn't the only. There are any number of things that would go into improving cost estimates.
Now, as we end the show, what would you say if you were going to give our listeners sort of a walking off the stage thing to remember for 6 months, a year from now, what would you want them to know?
I would want them to know that every day the crown jewel of our national security is being maintained by a small core group of people across the nuclear security enterprise who are delivering for the nation every day.
All right. Dr. William Conwell, Thank you for joining us on this episode of NucleCast.
No problem. It's been a pleasure.
And thanks to you, the listeners, and we'll see you on the next episode. We just had a great interview with Dr. William Conwell, who is the Deputy Associate Administrator for Budget at the National Nuclear Security Administration. And we talked about, well, you guessed it, the new budget. We have a budget on the way, and NNSA's budget is growing. Of course, they've got a lot of work. They went from 2 programs, 10 or 12 years ago to 7 programs in the works today. And so, of course, that means that it's an agency that is growing. And so we talked about that, and we talked about some of its challenges. But if you want to know more, you got to listen to the show.
This has been a production of the NY Deterrence Center, a 501c3 that seeks to educate key decision makers, stakeholders, and the public to ensure a broader understanding of the nation's strategic nuclear deterrent. Our executive producer is Kimberly Charrington, and this episode has been engineered and mixed by David Grunthal. Help us grow our followers by sharing it and follow the show on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter at NucleCast.